welcome to the Ben Cotton Podcast Weekly Edition. Brief encouragement and insight for your Wednesday morning. This is episode 2, and today the topic is hope. I also have a great quote from Joni Erickson Tada and some thoughts on why hope is often painful and a possible way forward for you and I together as we dig into God's Word and think clearly and deeply about the topic of hope. So here's to hope for the new year. So first, a quote about hope itself from Joni Erickson Tada. It says, or she says, "The best we can hope for in this life is a not whole peek at the shining realities ahead. Yet a glimpse is enough. It's enough to convince our hearts that whatever sufferings and sorrows currently assail us aren't worthy of comparison to that which waits over the horizon." So what is hope? Maybe first we need to define it a little bit before we talk about it. Hope is typically referred to, I think, when we desire something that we are uncertain of, something in the future that we think maybe isn't going to happen or maybe we're pretty sure won't happen. For example, I hope Ben finishes this podcast in time for me to get to work on time. You don't know if I'm going to finish. You think maybe I won't finish on time, but you want me to. You hope I do. And this is how we typically use the word hope in the vernacular. It may even be unlikely that this thing is going to happen, and that's how we use the word hope. It's wishful thinking. I hope that tomorrow was better than today. I hope I get that promotion. I hope. But this is not what the Bible talks about as hope. Biblical hope is different. It's almost entirely different. Biblical hope is confident expectation for what we desire in the future. Confident expectation. So the Bible does not talk about hoping for things that are uncertain, that we aren't sure of. It doesn't say, for example, God may or may not be faithful, but let's hope he is. It doesn't say God may or may not be powerful enough, but let's hope that he is. Hope is waiting confidently for something that you are assured is coming because God is in your future just like he is in your present. And that's one of the keys. It's when you look into your future, you imagine God is there just like he's here now. If you imagine a future without God, there is no hope. But imagining a future with God in it, with you in your future, well, there's hope in that. So Proverbs 13:12 says that hope deferred makes the heart sick. I'm sure you've heard that before. What does that mean, a sick heart? What is a sick heart? A sick heart is a bitter heart, a hardened heart, a heart that has been disappointed over and over and over again, where hope has been lost, and what has moved in its place is sickness or bitterness. Bitterness of heart. I think we've all experienced this, and maybe you are experiencing this right now as you listen to me. It could be about anything. It could be about your entire life. It could be just about your finances. It could be about your marriage or your kids or your career. Or maybe, I think, more common is, at least among many Christians, is that you have come to realize that you are the problem. That you are the one that needs to change. It's not your circumstances. It's not your finances. It's not other people. It's you that needs to change. And you have discovered that you changing is impossible. And you have become hopeless about yourself. You think that you will always be dominated by your weaknesses. So whatever it is, hope keeps getting deferred and your heart keeps getting sicker, harder, more bitter. When your heart is sick, when you allow bitterness in, when you allow hardness into your heart, the last thing you want to do is think about and listen to someone talk about hope. But I think this is really important, even if it makes you angry. And so there's a particular text. There's many, many scriptures about hope that we could talk about. There's one in particular that I want to dig into for a minute. And it's a short psalm, Psalm 131. Here's what it says, three verses. O Lord, my heart is not lifted up. My eyes are not raised too high. I do not occupy myself with things too great and too marvelous for me. But I have calmed and quieted my soul, like a weaned child with its mother. Like a weaned child is my soul within me. And then verse 3 says, O Israel, hope in the Lord from this time forth and forevermore. So I want to point out two things about this. One is he says, he has calmed and quieted his soul. Is your soul calm and quiet? Which just simply means stop allowing a desire to understand everything disrupt your peace and rob you of hope. But he says, I don't try to understand things that are too far above me. I don't turn my heart into the heavens to try to understand what belongs in the heavens. I don't try to understand that. And so that was what it means to have a calm and quiet soul. Isn't that really interesting? He doesn't occupy himself with things too great and too marvelous for him, the psalmist says. Knowledge and understanding is like a drug, I think. We get addicted to the sense of control that we think it gives us, don't we? The more you understand, the more you know, the more you feel like you're in control. And when you feel like you don't understand, you don't know, and you don't have information or understanding or knowledge about a particular thing, you don't feel like you have control over it. And that is deeply frightening. We get addicted to understanding, especially in this day and age when so much understanding is available to us, so much information and knowledge. All you have to do is look it up. No one knows how to not know something anymore. We hate the feeling of not knowing, but life is full of things we don't understand. Now, this is not, please don't understand, don't, or excuse, please don't misunderstand. This is not a plea for ignorance. I'm not saying we should all walk around being dunderheaded blockheads that don't understand anything and don't read anymore, don't think deeply. That's not what the psalmist is saying at all. What he says is that he doesn't seek to understand things that are beyond his reach, too wonderful for him. It's the things beyond knowing, beyond our control, beyond what God has revealed that he does not concern himself. The same should be true of us. There's plenty that God has revealed about himself in his word. There's plenty to understand, plenty to think about, plenty to grasp, plenty to reach for. But there are also a lot of things we will never understand this side of heaven. So this, really, from the psalmist in Psalm 131, is a plea for submission to the lordship of Jesus. It's a very simple recognition that our present and future belongs to God. There is a peace and a calm that comes when we do that, and from that comes hope. Simply admitting and disciplining ourselves to not need to understand things that are beyond our understanding. This also calls to mind this idea that we all have a little lawyer living in our hearts that keeps a record of everything that happens in our lives, every event. And we classify those events as good or bad. We keep a record. So we don't get the job promotion, that's a negative event. The car breaks down, that's a negative event. Somebody says an ill word to us, that's a negative event. We do get the job promotion, that's a positive event. So forth and so on. We have a lawyer that lives in our hearts and keeps a record of these things. And he does this day and night, and that lawyer presents a case regarding the goodness and the faithfulness of God to us constantly. He presents evidence, and we stand as judge over God to determine if he has been and will be good and faithful to us. And we feel justified because we have all of this evidence weighed out on the scales of justice. So I'm sure you can sense the problem with this, because it puts us in a position over God and puts Him on trial, but God won't be put on trial. We think that we are insulating ourselves against disappointment, but all we end up doing is allowing our hope to be destroyed and our peace disturbed. Peace and hope can only come when we are living in submission to the Lordship of Jesus. And that means not seeking to understand what only God can understand. You got to put to death the little lawyer living in your heart. Stop building a case against God or for God, and just let Him be God in your life. So that's the first thing about Psalm 131 that I think is has a huge impact on your hope and your peace. Second thing is, he says Israel, hope in God. It's striking to me that he does not say hope in tomorrow. Hope that things will get better tomorrow. Things will improve. And that's actually really comforting to me, because this is not false comfort, and I get tired of false, empty comfort. You and I both have lived long enough to know that things aren't always better tomorrow. So how do we handle that? If our hope is simply that tomorrow will be better than today, then we will constantly be disappointed when tomorrow is not better than today. Maybe that's where a lot of you are living right now. You've been hoping that tomorrow will be better, and quite often it's not better, it might even be worse. But Psalm 131 doesn't say do that. He says hope in God, Yahweh, the Lord. Don't take this the wrong way. Hear me out. Tomorrow may not be better than today, but it might be better than today. But putting your hope in that is a really flimsy place to put your hope. The fact that we live in this world implies that we need to be patient. The very idea of hope itself implies that we need to be patient. There are promises God has given us that are not yet fulfilled, and we live in that frustrating space in between the promise and the fulfillment. And what we have to hold us through in that in-between place is hope. If we had everything God had promised in our hand right now, we would not need hope. We wouldn't need faith. We wouldn't need peace. We wouldn't need any of those things. We certainly wouldn't need patience. The psalmist just seems to know that the only thing worthy of hoping in is God, not in anything this life can offer. God is the only sure thing. In good times and in bad times, Jesus is the source and the object of our hope, and will always be, not tomorrow. Often our hope really needs to be deferred when you think about it in these terms, because sometimes your hope is in the wrong thing, and that hope needs to be disappointed. It needs to be challenged. So sometimes your hope needs to be deferred so that you can discover a better source of hope. Because we place our hope in things that cannot do what we expect them to do. Nothing can fulfill the promises of God but God Himself. So if your hope is that tomorrow I'll feel better, or I'll act better, or tomorrow I'll be happier or more satisfied, tomorrow's circumstances will be better, people won't dislike me tomorrow, and then you wake up tomorrow and find that you have the same enemies both outside and inside of your own soul. The answer to that problem is not hope in tomorrow. The answer is hope in God and God alone. So Joni Erickson Tada says that all we need is a glimpse through the keyhole into heaven to give us the hope we need. And I think this is what she means. We see heaven through Jesus, maybe just a glimpse, but it is enough. That there is coming a day in the end when all sorrow, all pain, all strife, all struggle, all sin will be wiped away completely, never to be seen again. And this is our hope. So we hope in God and not in our circumstances. We use that glimpse of heaven through the work of Jesus to preach to ourselves like the psalmist does here in Psalm 131. We tell ourselves, self, hope in the Lord. So I'd like to ask you just to consider today where your hope is. Where is it? Where is it placed? What is it resting on? Consider if your hope is actually in God or if it's in something else. Is your soul quiet, or are you grappling to try to gain control through your own understanding of things that are beyond your understanding? Are you hoping in yourself? Are you hoping in God, or are you hoping in your own understanding? This is the question. And if you lack a sense of quiet in your soul, if you're agitated, it's a really good clue that your hope is in the wrong things. And so when your hope is disappointed, thank God. I know it sounds crazy, but thank God, because He has revealed to you yet another place where your hope has been put in the wrong thing. And He has given you an opportunity to shift your hope for the future onto Him and away from yourself and your own understanding.